So good morning, everybody. I really appreciate everyone coming to this panel. It's officially the panel with the longest title, which I think is testament to the excellent content that we're going to have today. My name is Matthew Marsom. I'm the Director of Public Policy at an organization called Public Health Institute. We're based in Oakland, California, but we are actually a global organization. We're working in around 30 countries today, but our foundation has been in California since we were founded now almost 40 years ago. We have been involved now for some time working both with the state of California and also with our partners in the foundations to support not just obesity prevention, nutrition, physical activity promotion activities, but specifically to help to converge and support the convergence work in California around common policy environmental change objectives. And I want to get, before we introduce our panel and get started, I want to just do a little bit of hand-waving at your end, which is to get a sense of who you are in the audience this morning. So how many of you, first of all, are actually funded communities with the Communities Putting Prevention to Work initiative? So funded CPPW communities. I'll keep your hands up so we can see. Okay, so there's about three or four of you. Okay. How many of you actually applied for CPPW as part of your community work but did not receive funding? Okay, great. And how many people do we have here today from the federal government? Feds? Okay, mark them down and get them at the end. How many of you here from state government, including people on the panel, which is, you know, state, okay. And local government? Okay, and then finally, community-based organizations, nonprofits. Well, I'll come on to foundations in a moment.
Right. Yeah, I'm a nonprofit.
Yeah, nonprofits, but and then actual, including subgroup of that, funders, foundations, so public, private funders, okay. Okay, good, well, that gives us a sense. I should finalize, who's from California? Because, oh. Well, that's helpful, because we won't have to spend too long giving you too much history, but I think for those of you in the room who are not from California, we'll do a little bit of that. I'm going to skip back. We're not going to do too many slides today. I'm just going to do a few as we're getting started, and then what we're going to do here, and it's not a perfect setup, but what we're going to have is a conversation and a dialogue between our panelists to really get deep into the issues. And so we're not going to do the usual stand up, do 10 minutes, do Q&A. This really is a dialogue. Public Health runs a project with the support of the California Endowment called Dialogue for Health, and this is Dialogue for Health in person. We really want to talk about these issues, have questions from you, and have a dialogue. And so that's going to be a challenge with the setup. So I'd like to just, you know, ask that, you know, thank you for your patience and understanding in that regard. So the federal stimulus and communities putting prevention to work really offered such a critical opportunity for those of us around the country working on these issues. I should say, I don't think anyone here has any relationships to disclose, and you don't want to know about my relationships. So can we all say aye?
Aye.
Oh, okay. Yes, if you could, actually. So I just want to just quickly run through very quickly who's on our panel. We really do have all the stakeholders represented here. I really like this little flower as well. I'll start again, Matthew Marsom with Public Health Institute. I'll be the moderator. We have funders represented today, Marion Standish with the California Endowment, and we have Jody Revelle with Kaiser Permanente, who's both a funder and also a healthcare provider, which will be critical as we get into our conversation. Representing the state, we have Peter Barth, who is the Assistant Secretary for the California Health and Human Services Agency in California, working with Secretary Kim Balshea, representing state government perspective. With the local government perspective, Tracy Delaney is the director of the San Diego Communities Putting Prevention to Work Initiative, but she also leads the chronic disease and health disparities work for the San Diego County Department of Public Health. And Avtar Niger Sadhu is a senior health educator and splits her time between Kern County Department of Health and the Central California Regional Obesity Prevention Program, CCROP, and will be today speaking from the community perspective. A couple of our speakers, due to other obligations, weren't able to be here today, and so I thank the panel. So we do have all of these, thanks, next slide, we do have these perspectives represented. This is a map of California. For those of you who don't know, we're on the left of the country in lots of different ways. If you can see it, it's a little difficult, but the yellow counties are those who applied for ARRA CPPW funds, and the blue are those that were funded. And we'll have Peter, I think, is going to run through some of the statistics in terms of what California received and how that compares. Next slide. Very quickly, a timeline, and we'll actually probably leave this up for most of the discussion, but just gives you a sense of where we were. The FOA, as I think many of us know, was released in 2009, now over a year ago. There was a decision from the partners here to really, starting with the foundation partners, to come together. And we'll run, actually, I won't go through this now, but we'll come into this. It'll be helpful to have that up on the screen, I think, as we get into the discussion. So we'll get started, and I'm going to start actually with Marion from a funder perspective. I mean, the California Endowment's been really at the hub of all of this work for so long in California now. And I'd like just for you to do two things. One, for those of us who are from California, just to give a quick overview of California Convergence. What is it for those of people, you know, really quickly for who don't know? And then secondly, from the endowment's perspective, what did the ARRA CPPW funds represent for you as an opportunity, and what was the impetus for you to take the lead on this initiative?
Thanks. Thank you, Peter.
And, Matthew. Is that on?
Can you hear? I think it's on, yeah. And okay. Good morning, everybody. A couple of things with respect to the California Convergence. I'm sorry, this screen is in the way. You can all move over here.
That might be a good idea, actually.
Just backing up for a quick moment, the California Endowment, which those of you from California are most likely familiar with, but for those who aren't, is a private foundation whose mission is to improve the health of all Californians. And over the last 6 or 7 years, we have been very intentionally investing in a program to improve opportunities for physical activity and healthy eating. And that work has taken the focus of investing in community change efforts that will improve community environments. And I know we're all familiar with these concepts. Certainly they've been very well represented here at the APHA conference. And our funding has translated into really three levels of funding. One, community-based efforts, really on-the-ground efforts to invest in community leaders to change policies and systems that will improve those community environments. We have similarly invested in really state-level advocacy, so that in California, by the time we got to the ARRA funding, we had quite a robust cohort of advocacy organizations that were focused on state-level policy. We also invested in an evaluation that could build the evidence base and build the stories of what we were doing in places throughout the state and with our advocacy work throughout the state. But as we did our work, and others joined with us, like Kaiser Permanente, and we were working with the California Nutrition Network and other funders, it became increasingly clear that across this huge state, we had many, many efforts underway that were comprehensive, that were multi-sectoral, that were policy and systems focused on physical activity and food environments. And yet they were not coordinated in any way, they were not working together in any way, with the exception of our investments in Central California, where we were bringing together the entire Central Valley, and we should have one of those little sticks to show you the entire Central Valley, which are multiple counties and really represent what I would call a regional approach to obesity prevention and community health. But other than that investment, much of what was underway in California was, I would describe, fragmented and living in its own particular funding silo. So we joined forces with Kaiser Permanente and our grantees to talk about what it would look like if we brought people together across a variety of funded initiatives under different auspices with some common mission. And the common mission is multi-sectoral, comprehensive, policy-focused environmental change. And that we believe the value of bringing those discrete initiatives together under a larger banner would help push forward our efforts in California far beyond what any individual funded initiative might be able to do. And the ARA investment, the ARA opportunity, clearly gave us our first shot at demonstrating that that could be done. And I won't go too much further than that, but this funding opportunity helped us rapidly, and I think you can see from the timeline, bring together stakeholders from all sectors to develop a common criteria and a common set of focus priorities that, through a variety of mechanisms, which we'll talk about, would bring California forward as a one state with a shared set of objectives. And we felt that was an enormous opportunity, and we were really poised to take advantage of it.
We'll come to Peter Barth next. Again, Peter is the Assistant Secretary at California Health and Human Services Agency, and really has that ability to look across what the state of California is doing, and of course, within both, that means within state and also public and private. I want to ask you, Peter, to just speak from the state perspective. You know, we've heard Marion describe their impetus, but where, you know, with Governor Schwarzenegger, who really has made addressing obesity a centerpiece of his work, what was the state trying to achieve with this effort?
Thanks, Matthew. California, as you mentioned, and Governor Schwarzenegger, while the funders and communities were really working on a robust way to address multi-sector comprehensive environmental change, as Mary noted, we had some state movement as well. In 2005, the governor convened with a lot of these partners Summit on Health, Nutrition, and Obesity. He announced over the course of the ensuing 5 years a number of statewide policy changes, eliminating social schools, trans fats from restaurants, menu labeling, et cetera. And also going back even further to our model of tobacco, we've always been interested in this concept of multi-sector, multi-issue, multi-field, comprehensive environmental change. And we had a lot of success in California with tobacco. Our rates dropped significantly. And so as we started looking at this increase in obesity epidemic, we said, we need to do the same thing here. And so over the course of Governor Schwarzenegger's administration, this has been a priority, trying to come together with a number of different partners in the community, across the state, from advocacy groups and stakeholders to healthcare providers, to foundations and funders, to really come up with this comprehensive change. And so when we looked at, and we heard about, and I think anyone in this room, when we heard that the federal stimulus bill included $500 million for something called communities putting prevention to work, this idea that's across the country, we all said, yes, finally, we have this opportunity to get it, we can do this. And then when September 22nd rolled around and we finally got this funding opportunity, we were all really surprised and shocked. We were all kind of scared because not only was the application due on a very, very, very quick timeline, but it, instead of not only making states competitive with one another, it within states, it made communities competitive with one another, the state competitive with the communities. And when we look back to our tobacco model in California, that's not how we were operating. We were operating under a comprehensive state framework. Where communities were aligned, where our priorities were aligned to really make this change across the state. So we realized we needed to do something. And so because we had already had this dialogue going on way back to the early days of the Schwarzenegger administration, Secretary Belche, the governor, the California Endowment, and all of these partners said, we need to come together and create a statewide partnership. We need to do it quickly. We don't have time. And we need to create a statewide framework from which all communities can sign on and we can come with a unified voice as multiple applications. And we realized this because we needed to change the paradigm of what we thought of success. There's a limited pot of money. We knew that everyone who wanted money wasn't gonna get money. And so often when we look at how grants are given, we think of success only in did you receive money or did you not receive money. But we realize we could also have a layer of success by saying, let's get as much money in California as possible to communities that need it. But then in addition, let's make sure we have this partnership that continues to support these efforts, whether or not you receive funding. And that was another layer of success. And that's why we wanted to do this.
So hold that thought about competition, because I want to come back to that. But before we do, Peter, could you give us the numbers, because I think you have them. So California, we know that 17 counties were part of the convergence process, and 16 were funded, I believe. Is that?
No. It's actually a little different than that. We had, remember the pot was $500 million, and actually it ended up becoming about $192 million all of a sudden. Remember, it was also broken down into a number of different specific pots, the large local health departments versus the small local health departments, the state, and then also within each of those demographic areas, it was tobacco, nutrition and physical activity, NUPA, or obesity, as we might say, and also special initiative type efforts. And so with all of that being said, what we had as part of the convergence process was 17 counties that submitted letters of intent to apply. Those were 15 large counties, two small counties. Then there were 16 counties that actually continued on the convergence process. Mm-hmm. And then in the end, because there wasn't a whole lot of funding available, you know, the state received its non-competitive share of money. Los Angeles County received $32 million for both obesity and tobacco work. San Diego County received about $16 million for obesity work. And Santa Clara County received about $8 million for tobacco. And in total, California received just about $60 million out of the total pot. And often when we look at funding, we say, if California receives about 10% of that federal share, that's about what it is proportional population-wise, they actually receive almost 13%. So we would say that from a funding perspective alone, it was actually fairly successful.
Okay. Jody, you with Kaiser obviously represent both a funder and also a healthcare provider, and I want to ask you about that in a moment. But just can you talk about the carrot and the stick that the funders use to have the communities work together, and what did the funders offer? And Marion, you can also add to this. But what did you offer to the communities, to these counties, the 16 that actually decided to move forward, engage in the process, to keep that moving forward? But very specifically, tangible benefits that were provided to them.
Sure. I'm Joey from Kaiser from San Diego in California. And just quickly before I get there, just to say that Kaiser entered the conversion partnership also just from the medical perspective. We're a healthcare provider, we're a health insurer, and we're also a funder. And from our perspective, years ago, about 2004, our physicians were just crying out. We're seeing overweight children, families, we see over and over and over and over. What can we do? We're throwing back into our communities, safe environments, safe, lack of fresh fruits, vegetables, safe places to play. It was really a cry internally to say, what can we do in the environment? So we were thrilled to look around the environment and say, we can't do this alone. We need to go to our partners. So you know, California, the Dominant, and the state, and the communities really was just the right opportunity years ago to join the conversions. And also that our physicians were really ready to become advocates and use our web code, put on the web code, tell us where to go, tell us where to be, we'll be there, we can talk from the medical perspective. So it was just a great opportunity for the convergence world. So when the whole proposal came through, it was really a mad dash, a lot of conference calls, and lots of trying to figure out what's going on. And I think that we really recognized early on that we had the communities underway. They were shovel ready. There were many communities shovel ready across the state. So it was really our opportunity to say, let's get the information out there. Let's put this information through the network as fast as possible. Get the information about what funding, what cost of money, what's due when, who applies where. So I think the communication channels was the first way that was provided to all members of convergence up and down the state. Through CDH's office, through conference calls, through emails, this was going on. Then also, as we were talking, it became apparent that some of the communities were really well-versed, good writers, good grant writers ready to go. Other communities really needed probably a little bit of help. So I think lots of conversations about could we support grant writing in the community, really the California Endowment and our Southern California partners, the Calpin Kaiser, stepped up and actually funded grant writers to go in and help communities that needed it.
Yeah, I think it was just offered out. Was it just offered to everybody,
writing school offers something new today.
The grant writing support, and ironically, you know, you think only the small counties or the small entities would need grant writing support, but LA County needed help with grant writing support because, as many of you know, local health departments really don't have, big and small, really don't have those types of resources. We offered the incentive of grant writing support, in addition to other things that Jody will talk about, for those counties and those health departments that agreed to certain conditions back. Mm-hmm. And that was the critical issue. And you can talk about that?
Sure. So the answer to the counties, the counties that there was a formal written MOU, I guess, over to the counties that was sent out, really expressed some planning had to join the convergence, be not part of the convergence. They had signed on to agree to push forward, to agree to sign on to some of the policy recommendations for the state, with Sugar Street beverages being one of the policy areas.
Health and all policies
and joint use agreements open up to the schools, school and communities to share inclusive activities settings. So the counties all had to agree to sign on to it in order to receive the support back, which was pretty remarkable for the counties to talk through and agree to sign on to a policy agenda at the state level in order to be part and be part of the convergence in order to receive these kinds of grant writing services. And also needs to be part of the convergence over time. It wasn't just
I want to come. I don't want to interrupt.
Yeah. The two incentives you should build out to support. Well, Governor Schwarzenegger is a good one.
You do this one.
The other two incentives, the three incentives were the grant writing support, a letter of support from Governor Schwarzenegger, which you would not get, obviously, if you didn't commit to having your proposal include the policy recommendations that were agreed to, and I'm assuming we'll get to that at some point, by a group of stakeholders, as well as the California Endowments President letter of support. And I thought those three carrots were significant incentives for local health departments that are totally independent entities. I mean, the state really can't tell them what to do to essentially volunteer.
So let's go to Tracy and then Avtar right now. I'm going to come back to Jody to talk about, again, I want to get deeper into some of the, as a healthcare provider and health insurer, and also back to Peter to talk about some of the state outcomes from this. But so Tracy, first of all, for the benefit of the audience, again, you are the director of the CPPW program in San Diego. And so I think it would be helpful just to describe, you know, again, what the level of funding was and for very quickly what you are moving forward and where you are currently. But then just get down to this issue. You know, San Diego, you are, you know, has a, you're, as Marion said, you're an independent, you know, county health department and a political entity. There's a dynamic there that's somewhat maybe different than the state of California. And then as a county, you also want to have your own vision to put into play and may also look around you and say, well, how can we play with our other partners, not just at the state level, but regionally? And so how did you engage with this? What was the immediate reaction when you were contacted from the funders and the other partners? And then how did you move forward with that? And obviously, you know, don't just limit yourself to my question, because I'd like you to really give a 360 perspective to what was going on in San Diego.
Well, in San Diego, I think we were very well positioned when the grant came out because of work that had taken place over the years. In 2006, our county had released a childhood obesity action plan, and this is something that was supported by unanimously by our Board of Supervisors. So we had strong political will in our community around obesity prevention, and then really following a socio-ecological model. And we were really, over the years since 2006, pushing to get into that policy and systems arena. And for us, you know, some of it was very new. We hadn't spoken with people now that we consider typical partners, but at the beginning, it was a real getting to know you kind of experience. What does a transportation planner do? What goes on with city planning? And we really took those initial years and learned about that, built our own capacity, started building relationships, and our obesity initiative action plan, there's some copies that we need in the back, was already structured into seven sectors, which included government, which I had been the chair of that, schools, which our nutrition manager in the county had been in charge of. So we were, there was schools, healthcare, CEOs, media, and businesses. So we had been working over these years. And my initial reaction, we were talking about this last night when we got together for this panel, was kind of amazement to see this grant proposal, because if I had dreamed something this to happen, it would have been this application that was looking at nutrition and physical activity and really going upstream in terms of systems and policy change. So I think we were fortunate because we do have that political will. We have been working in a public-private partnership with many of our colleagues in the county for several years. So, Jack, to your question, when we heard from the convergence, it was a very positive thing for us. Scrambling doesn't quite describe the way everybody felt, and the timeline was incredibly intense, and bureaucracies as they are, to get ideas passed through. So, for us, we looked at this as a real positive, that there was leadership coming from the state and from our vendors, continuing that support, moving forward to the calls and the support that we were getting. And we took this so to heart that the centerpiece of our application actually became health and all policies. And that was to reflect the work that was going on in the state and our commitment to share these resources both with other counties and with the state, and the hope that that would be useful to do so and to be able to continue that.
Thanks. Avtar, you're representing today the community perspective, but I know you're with the county, Kern County Health Department, and split your time with the C-Crop Initiative. But with the community hat on for a moment, community-based organizations also may be challenged by infrastructure issues, capacity. And so can you talk again about how, first of all, we should acknowledge that Kern was not funded. And so you can certainly address that issue. But then how, for the community-based partners, what support were they looking for? How were they disadvantaged, perhaps, by the federal process? And so therefore, how did the convergence process put together, which was this holistic support for their work, help to strengthen their involvement in CPPW?
Mm-hmm. So just a little background about Kern County. Is it okay if I sit here?
You can stand, I think so. Well, we have a mixed view.
Sure, so just a little background about Kern County. We are one of eight counties funded by an initiative by the California Endowment called Central California Regional Obesity Prevention Program. So when we think of California, I often feel we think of the metropolitan cities like Los Angeles and Bay Area, but the rural of California, the Central Valley, which is very rural, has its own very much challenges to face. So what the initiative CROP did for us, it made us really understand this concept of environmental policy changes, which is a very foreign concept for somebody like me as a dietitian who thinks from an educator perspective. I educate well, but how am I going to make policy environmental changes? So this set us up for a really great way to participate in the R grant, because we had been doing this kind of work for 3 years. Now, from a community perspective, when we went into the community, communities are not thinking, or at least in where we were, obesity. They're thinking about my child's safety, jobs, after-school funding is trying to be cut. How is this going to help me? So we really had to think from a perspective of listening to the community's needs. What is it that the communities are saying to us? And yet weave in the goals that were set up by the initiative. And so when we did that in over a three-year period, we felt like we are ready for the ARA funding when it came around the grant. Because we really listened, if safety is an issue, well, you don't have a safe place for your kids because of the park. That park limits your physical activity, which then that's inhibiting your environment. We started to really listen and weave the concerns in a way that address the community's perspective, the outlines of the grant, and yet making those changes that we needed to do.
So what was the fallout from not being funded?
You know, that's what happens in the Central Valley for us. We often feel we're overlooked, lack of resources, it's rural, the types of government, incorporated and unincorporated, it often feels the area that needs the resources are overlooked, and yet we're such in a good position, along with my sister counties, Fresno County, who applied, and I want to say Tulare with the state, that we have similar resources, and similar kind of geography, the work force, the makeup of the counties, and this would have really benefited us to make more of the changes we want to. We were shovel ready, just like Jody had said. We had in place a great community model that we're ready to replicate. It was daunting to go now countywide, but we would have been able to do it. But the lack of resources not coming in, it doesn't stop the work we're doing. It just makes it a little harder to advance forward where we want to go.
And we're going to come on in a moment to talk about ongoing engagement of all the communities in California. So there is both peer learning within those that were funded, but also benefiting others. I want to just pause for a moment and go back to the audience. There's a voice.
It's you.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. That was strange. Sorry about that. But the peer learning will come on to a moment. But back to the audience, I asked earlier on about who is a funded CPPW community. Could I just ask how many other states or communities actually engaged in a similar exercise in your communities? So first of all, actually had built that in capacity so you were shovel ready, but then used these policy, funding, program levers to then respond to the CPPW opportunity. Any other states? Yeah, could you stand up and speak, say where you are and just speak to that? And what did you were funded through CPPW?
I'm not sure what that is.
Communities Putting Prevention to Work. So the ARRA money that came through, okay.
No, this funding actually came from our leading health foundations within our state to help create this prevention plan. Mm-hmm. And so we're now sort of getting online to get funding for this. But most of the thing is hopefully through foundations that supported that, because it's again, we'll help to continue some of the recommendations that came out of our task force while we're looking into ACA.
Okay. I saw another hand. Was that specific related to Communities Putting Prevention to Work?
Yeah.
Can you say where you are? There was the first round of the Affordable Care Act funding that went through the Prevention Trust Fund. There was some money that was authorized and appropriated within the passage of the bill, and some of that money that was in the Public Prevention Trust Fund was put out to the approved but not funded communities. And when those resources came out, it meant it went to that next tier down. And actually, we should speak to, in a moment, perhaps, Jody, could you just talk about Santa Clara, or perhaps Peter, Santa Clara County? Peter, do you want the mic?
Yeah, as Maggie said, first round community prevention work was through federal stimulus. The second round was using the same application, were 10, they funded 10 more communities of one state and 9 communities through federal health reform this last year in Santa Clara County, which received obesity money. Back in the first round, received some obesity funds in the second round, so again, up California.
So on that note, I'll come to you in a minute, but we all know that there is, beyond the stimulus, there is a tremendous opportunity in front of us right now with the investment that's really, we think, on the near horizon for the community transformation grants. And so I'd like several members of our panel to address that. But first of all, Peter, you know, the state has taken on, you know, really take one of the grasp with both hands, health reform, really from all sides, in terms of how California will take advantage of this. But could you speak to how the convergence process with the communities putting prevention to work, the lessons are being learned to benefit the state for health reform?
Yeah, right. So as Matthew said, this is a model that we use specifically for this first round of federal stimulus care funding. But we realize that there's a need in California to continue a statewide partnership to create statewide priorities, frameworks, messaging, as we address a number of issues and opportunities that are coming from the federal government and also within our own state. And so as we look to the new Federal Prevention Council created in California, as we look toward the community transformation grants, more funding for communities doing prevention to work, there's a number of opportunities where having a unified voice and having it, this partnership will benefit communities, will benefit the state. And just to recap again, so what we did in California is we brought people together, we had a very quick stakeholder forum meeting that included state government, local government, statewide organizations, and advocacy stakeholders. We created some statewide priorities that were brought up both health and all policies, joint use, beverage environments, healthy beverage environments, that were specific enough to policy areas that we thought were important in California, but also broad enough to allow communities to think of the creative ideas they needed for their community and their application. And then it also enabled them to receive support, as we mentioned, letters from the governor, letters from the endowment, and also technical resources. But also it created this partnership with the convergence, and there's an ongoing learning network and on-learning opportunity for communities to work with each other. So communities, even communities that were not funded, the reason are continuing to have this dialogue, and that's a very important way. I mean, I have to say, from the state of California perspective, we submitted 7 applications to the federal government, 2 for our non-competitive piece, 2 for on behalf of the small counties, because that's what we had to do, and then 3 competitive pieces. We only received funding for our 2 non-competitive pieces. So if we were looking at this from the traditional vantage point were we successful, and we were looking at it just from the funding perspective, probably not. We were probably not successful because we didn't get as much money as we were hoping. But we consider this a big success because we're continuing to have dialogue and partnership opportunities with communities, and because we created this partnership, we have that win already. And that's, again, shifting the paradigm, changing the conversation. And so as we look to a new administration in the state of California, as many of you maybe know, we have Governor Brown coming back into office. And as we look to all these federal opportunities, we are working very hard as an administration to make sure that we are transitioning well a lot of these opportunities and trying to come together with these partners again so we do not lose the momentum we created last year. We can push it forward as we look into the future.
So we did have a question. Please, yes, yes, again, name and organization. And that's where I'd like to come back to Avtar and Tracy with the county community perspective. What is the, first Tracy with you, how are you, you know, what, how is that ongoing peer learning and mentoring working within that convergence process? I know that the state has been doing some convenings. If you could speak to that, and then how perhaps Avatar is there? How might are you and or might you engage as an unfunded community in that work as well? So Tracy first.
So we are engaging in some within California peer mentoring, and I think it's really driven by the state and our commitment to be sharing resources. And so at this point, we are meeting quarterly with the state and our other three funded sites to be able to reach each other. I think we're trying to identify some of these areas that might be in the pulse of what's going to help in the future, and what are those resources that are going to be helpful to the other communities. To be honest, it's relatively, even though we're 7 months into this project and it's only a 24-month project, so our timeline is very intense. I think for us yet to actually, we do not have as many deliverables yet that we can share, but we are anticipating that, and I think I'll hold off on what those might be to another
part of
the conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you. With or without the funding, our mentoring and our work still continues. And we have, in the last 3 to 4 years, built very good capacity and very good strength with our community partners. We have a great group of organizations, especially a group of community women who are leading the way in Kern County and our neighboring counties of environmental policy changes that they have done in their neighborhood. And what they are in a very approachable group. It's not the public health people coming to community and saying, listen to us, this is what we want to do, let us tell you. It is the everyday person who's saying, we have the exact same problems in our neighborhood as you're facing. This is what we have done. This is what's worked for us. Maybe these are some of the ideas. That peer-to-peer learning TA is working really well because it's the same organization of people, it's a similar concerns. It is the same issues that they're facing. And there's a comfort level when it's a one-on-one peer mentoring versus an agency that comes in and says, let's do this for you and see how we can do it.
I would like to add one more thing about that. There's so many activities that are going on, but one that actually the Health Frame Convergence came and helped us with was we brought together all of the funded, all of our contracts, all of our subcontracts within San Diego County. And we sometimes even silo, our local firemen folks, our school folks, and the folks that are working on nutrition. And we brought all of them together, and we had almost speed dating at tables set up. And so the people could really get to know each other in these other fields. And many of these people have got together. So the SANDAG, our NPO folks, were so desperate to talk to the school folks about the safe routes. So I think that we're really starting to build that, even though we've done a lot of work in terms of relationships, we just realize how much deeper it has to go and how many more textures there are to this. And this is providing us a real opportunity, I think, to make some of those great connections.
Jody, Marion, first of all, just anything that's been mentioned in the last couple of questions you wanted to address, particularly in terms of health reform, you're a healthcare provider, what do you see as health reform is implemented, not just the Prevention Trust Fund, but this work that's going on in Convergence, how does it benefit your work? And then, well, address that first, then I want to come back to you as well to talk about the ongoing engagement with your funded initiatives as part of this Convergence work.
I just want to go back just a moment. When Tracy said scrambling, just reminded me, Kaiser's relatively large organization, and in Oakland, we actually have three levels. We have our national offices, headquarters, our Northern California headquarters, and we have our medical centers. I work with the governor and Marion, and everyone was running around trying to get the letters of support. Lisa, in working with the counties directly, me personally, I was in my office scrambling internally at Kaiser because we have 13 medical centers in Northern California, just in Northern California, and I think there were 7 or 8 in Southern California. So as those letters of support and the county processes were going on, our local facilities and our community benefit managers locally who have very long-lasting relationships with the county health departments, with the nonprofits in the area, we have referral funders, they were getting calls from the county health department saying, can you send us a letter of support? Can you sign onto this policy platform? Can you send a position to the advisory council? So I was in a great position both to hear what was going on with the Convergence and help them understand the facts and what was going on. Then also bringing our internal folks together, helping to vet some of the policies that would be signed on to by the counties that we were asked to provide their support to and then put our positions on the panel, you know, on the advisory committee, on their, you know, recommending policy agendas and that. So I don't know if you could appreciate the complexity of that in terms of either, but those all passed. So we were trying to explain and read positions on environmental change and policy and joint use within weeks. So, but it was wonderful. I mean, I think we actually have one of our lead positions in Santa Clara on the advisory council. Now on that ground, I think the prevention, the tobacco and MBC grants. So that was pretty remarkable just at that time. So we're also well positioned now in that the policy wheels are a little greasy for County Gambia. We've got a position out there on the policy platform for Kaiser, you know, local Santa Clara, but it raises issues all the way back through the organization. You know, that in the era of healthcare reform, I think what we're seeing internally is there's just so much analysis and understanding and really trying to understand like the Medi-Cal populations and flux of members that we're receiving and how our organization normally provides care and then works with the communities. And so while that's going on, we're just prevention, don't forget about prevention. So this has really just been an amplification of the message for us, and we actually now have concrete work going on across the state that's federally funded that we can now voice the table in the healthcare reform.
Any other healthcare representatives in the room today? Could you just say where you want to say?
I'm Jody Polly.
Oh. Oh, that's right. Good. Thought I recognized you.
Let me just add one piece here off of what Jody was saying in the context of healthcare reform, because we have a new Congress in front of us, and the challenges of implementing healthcare reform, particularly the Prevention and Wellness Trust, is, you know, right in front of us. And whether we will retain that trust and those resources, I think, is a question, and one that hopefully we'll all be fighting for. But the value of what was accomplished in California in creating a statewide infrastructure for policy change around these issues, I think will be there for us, whether or not we have the level of funding from the federal government that we were anticipating when at the outset. So remember, these funding resources were for 2 years only, and we all know how long it takes to accomplish the kind of goals that we were all putting in our applications. And the convergence, and which is our, I think, statewide network, the statewide platform, will leverage those two-year resources, those that peer-to-peer learning, the policy focus that we adopted, I think, long beyond the 2 years. It will carry those efforts forward. So there is real intrinsic value in creating that for all localities and for all states so that they have a sustained capacity to move policy and systems and funding should it become available, but you can't necessarily build it just based on the fact that funding is available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, adding to that, I think because of all the work already in the reserves and the long time we spent talking about policy and environmental change and working with community leaders and getting the right language together, even on terms of wrong positions, being able to really speak to not just, you know, exercise programs and nutrition programs, but the environment and the reasons environment affects health. You know, really honing in on those messages is really creating long-term change. I mean, we're really talking about, I think, the draws of convergence anyway for us also is towards change in California. I think we did pretty well in the tobacco era and still working on it, but certainly in the obesity and place-based initiative. So the whole infrastructure, as Marion was saying, for policy change and be able to speak the language and train advocates and from all levels up and down the state and from the community to physicians to state leaders, it's just going to set us up for change over time.
After I want to answer.
So Tracy had here talking about relationships earlier, the whole idea of speed dating, but an important part of the ARA grant for us was having that relationship with schools because of the youth risk behavior surveillance, questionnaire that was the YRBSS. And so for right now, if I talk from the public health department side, our public health department, I think we learned our relationships with schools was not at the deep level that we wanted. So it's at a superficial level. Health fairs, promotional medias, information, educating youth about STDs, all the stuff that public health departments do well. What happens is when you have that great community relationship, the parents who are concerned about is after school programs being cut. Now this idea of joint use, again, thank you with California Convergence, we were able to start this dialogue. Can schools be opened up after hours? These were some of the things that were coming up prior to the R grant that we were building relationships. We were building and working with schools to think about this is all affecting this idea of obesity, environmental policy changes, parents wanting a safe place for their kids, programs getting cut. This made the public health department really have to step up and say, we have to get involved with our schools at a deeper level. So what it did for us is build more partnerships or in ways that I think that weren't there before. And so we also kind of did feed dating too, but I think we had to drop out after a round.
Oh, we have a question. We have a comment in the audience. Yes, hi. Who wants to start that with that one? Jody?
My first question is this model that you developed for the characteristics and asking local health departments to sign on to those three priorities. Is that a model that you see as applicable perhaps to future federal grant opportunities?
Yeah, and my perspective, I think that those are policy agendas that are large enough and broad enough that they're actually really incurring. I don't think it's just for that long round. I mean, in California, I think those are longstanding prior we were working on them, and I think we will continue to work on them. If we change policy agendas as we move into the future, probably we would add on, but I think it really helped to sort of narrow, they're broad enough, they're narrowing, so we're all kind of driving in the same direction at least a little bit. And then in terms of for funding, Convergence has been a really interesting, it's the infrastructure that was set up in California, and I think what's nice is that we had 3 deep place based grants funded over 5 years, or ending in December, we're just about to launch another round for 3 years. And we fully anticipate our new set of grantees for the next 3 years, all doing place based work, all doing policy work, that's right spot on to what the agenda was, will then also join in the California Convergence. And so it's been a fluid network. We'll bring on new grantees. And then even beyond the place-based efforts, it's been interesting talking around some of the larger entities in the state that are well aligned with the policy of the Metropolitan Transportation Commission, some of the larger overarching policy and advocacy organizations, how we bring them on and we meet with them moving forward. So we'll continue funding these areas also.
Well, I think, we are really after a big movement for change. That's really our big time vision. And we see investing in an effort like this one as a key ingredient, given, our role as a foundation in California, given California as a state and its influence, and given where the communities are in the state, that we really have that unique opportunity to provide some leadership around the country about what can be done and how it can succeed. So I think we really feel this has been tremendously valuable and will continue to be valuable. I just wanted to kind of park a note for folks that, and I don't know if we'll have time to get to it, but in developing the policy priorities, we didn't really pull them out of thin air. One, communities have been working on these issues for some time, and one of the wonderful elements of the California Convergence and the partnership with advocates in the state is we're really able to lift up the voice of community values and community issues sort of through the pipeline so that they get heard at a very different level. And much of the innovation that occurs in community can then be heard at a much different level. But we applied a set of criteria to the policies that we were kind of assessing. And one of the key criteria, quite frankly, was this is a two-year grant. You know, what is it that we think is sufficiently secure within the evidence base we have? Not the evidence base we want, but the one that we have that we think is kind of has to get done in order to move the dial on improving community health, on dealing with the obesity epidemic. So there were a lot of elements in there that came together. But for us, we will continue absolutely along these same lines and see community transformation grants as the next big opportunity to leverage the capacity that we have.
You had a second part of your question. Did that address both pieces?
Probably a longer answer to your question than folks need to hear, but I do think that it doesn't necessarily influence our decision making because communities, whether they're in an RSI or not, play different roles in terms of moving state policy. And they play those roles, one, because of where they are and, you know, how they relate to policy and, frankly, political issues in the state, what their level of leadership and capacity is so they can be a peer to others who are just getting underway. So there are many reasons to fund groups, even if they're already funded in a, you know, our grant context, at not just do they have resources or not. You may fund them at a different level, but certainly we want those organizations that at the community level that have the greatest sophistication to be part of the mix so that they can help lead others. And we don't have to reinvent the wheel over and over again. We want to build on what we've accomplished.
Jody, on the funders question, and then I know, Peter, you want to talk about...
I think that Santa Clara is one of our service areas, and we grapple with the obesity and tobacco epidemic position. And so in that case, they're well funded, and we've talked to our senior manager, our local funder representative, and I said, oh, great, so you're going to get there, we're going to need to worry about funding. She said, oh, no. It was an interesting conversation because she felt that it was a countywide effort, it was a big policy, and a lot of great people at the table. And she said, well, you know, I really want to start talking about the on-the-ground, you know, the demonstration sites that we can bring all together. Is there some reason to fund there, need to fund, you know, at school, in the community, and bring some of the policies down home quickly. So we're still thinking about that, you know, in the R-funded areas, from our funding perspective. And then in the non-funded, I think it's very exciting. We've been, you know, the county's got a lot of energy bringing this forward. There's a great working group now, and we're, you know, talking to some of the, looking at some of the plan, talking to the collaborators, and trying to understand what are the pieces that can move forward, what are the pieces for new grants. And we'll try to supplement if we can. We can't fund, you know, $10 million effort in each county, but just the fact that they all came together and there's actually a good plan, like the county's online, you can look at it. We spend a lot of time now digging into it, trying to think, okay, well, what makes sense? Where can we, not only from Kaiser's perspective, not only funding dollars, but also just our own assets in that community, our physicians, our educators, whatever else we can do to keep that momentum going and make sure that they're connected to convergence.
We have a question in the audience, but I wanted to just let Peter speak to the, I think, the longer-term issue.
Well, I was going to say, I think
outside work and not more important than what we actually end up doing because it influences it so much. So what we were able to do here is see an investment priority and opportunity. So instead of looking at this as a discrete pot of money, and that's the limitation of this investment, is how can we invest this and make it grow into new opportunities or new new opportunities, new issues. And for example, in February 2010, the governor, Governor Schwarzenegger, hosted the second summit on health, nutrition, and obesity. And the announcements he made, his bold priority actions for the year, were closing the loophole on eliminating not only sodas but electrolyte replacement beverages in schools, mandating the schools provide free, fresh, safe drinking water, and creating a health and wellness policy task force at the state level, bringing together all of our different siloed agencies. And that was a direct result of this policy priority we made for our, and this had nothing to do with ours. This had more to do with statewide policy change. So this is a really big opportunity there. And furthermore, for sustainability and long-term needs, we need to always go back and check ourselves. And so I think actually this conference and this panel is very helpful for a number of us, saying, oh, wow, we really need to get back on track and see what other opportunities we have and how can we refocus and make sure that we're doing all we can to move this forward. All of this is a result of an investment because of just organizing around art, and instead we're trying to grow into other areas, try to push around organization, prevention, wellness, council, community transformation grants, health and wellness implementation. The list goes on and on. And there's a unique opportunity for the states to influence and communities to influence what happens in the federal government and other looking to us. And so in California, we see that as a role we need to play. And hopefully all of you, some of you may be thinking, well, we don't have a, Utah convergence. We don't have some of these things. There are a lot of partnerships there. There are ways to make this work in every state and every community. And often when I go out and talk about our collaborative work in multi-sector ways with some of the counties in California, they will talk to me about all sorts of things. I will ask, have you, as a local health officer, spoken with your MPO? Have you ever met the superintendent of schools in your area? Sometimes they have, sometimes they haven't. And so really making those relationships, establishing that, I think this is the message you're hearing a lot, especially at this conference, is key to advancing the public health agenda. Being able to work and speak in the language of other folks and other policymakers is key for us to be able to advance our agenda. A lot of people don't necessarily care about it from the public health perspective. They care from the education perspective, the transportation perspective, the economic perspective. And let's talk about economics. In California, we are clearly having economic challenges. And this is an opportunity for us to maximize and move forward with new innovative ideas despite the fiscal restraints and challenges we're facing to come up with new partnerships. So this is really important.
So I just want to come to the gentleman in the audience for your question. Is it on this point? Because I know Avtar wanted to make a comment. So do you want to ask your question? Yep.
Sure.
Yeah.
Peter, that was very helpful because I'm
can you say name and organization?
Oh, sure. I'm with Robert Johnson Foundation.
Okay, great.
And I'm thinking about how the convergence right now is thinking about your policy agenda and how intentional you want to be with that. So thinking about three issues. One is, the attention around prevention and public health, post health reform law is the good news, but it's also spotlight on it and a pressure for return on investment. Secondly, you mentioned both the political changes and the economic challenges. So if you think about what's politically viable and what's feasible. And then the third is, especially on the obesity issue, as the science continues to emerge and is still forming and is not as solid as we would like, thinking about those three things together, I'm really interested in, has that changed your collective thinking around setting those policy priorities and how intentional you want to be about the way you set them?
That's a question for the whole panel, really, I know, because, so, Marion, why don't you start first? And I should say, by the way, Avtar has to leave at 9:45, and so we want to come back to her before she has to leave.
Yeah, my flight option is to leave at 10 o'clock or stay here till 6, and as much as I love Denver, I'm not sure if I want to stay here till 6, so...
No, go ahead, Mary.
Okay. Because it'll give me a while to formulate my thoughts.
Okay. I was going to come back to our criteria, because I think your question kind of begs that one. What was our criteria initially when we set our policy priorities, and will they hold as we go forward? And I don't know that we've really gathered around that yet, and we certainly will. But let me just tick off what are the criteria that we applied. first of all, we were looking at, is there any evidence base, or how closely is the evidence base informed by current science, and otherwise, how strongly justified is our policy priority? What's the impact? How likely is the policy to have a significant impact on population health? How far will it reach? How likely is it to impact a large proportion of the population? Obviously, in a two-year horizon with the need for a return on investment, we've got to show something within relatively short periods of time. That's the only way I think we're going to be able to secure those prevention dollars over the long run. Equity, how likely is the policy to reduce health inequities? Feasibility, can we do it? Can we really implement a new policy within a time frame? Sustainability, how likely is it that we will be able to sustain the impact or keep it going? How transferable is the policy to other places? Because we knew only a few places we're going to secure these resources, and we certainly don't believe we're going to change the course of obesity for the state of California, although we could if we do LA County well. We could actually change the course, but we realize that LA County doesn't, as big as it is, really represent the diversity of the state. What's the economic impact? And that is everything from leveraging federal resources, new jobs created, all the opportunities that we might be able to secure if we look at economic impact. And how relevant is the policy to community priorities? So we really pulled together, looking at that set of criteria, what we thought the right focus would be for California. And I think it's a very important question that you ask. Do they hold true? I mean, my instinct is they do. They really do. Although the pressure is greater for us to demonstrate effectiveness. I absolutely think that's the case. And I think it speaks to why we need to be so focused in our work and really be clear on what we think success looks like, at least within a short-term benchmark. It may not be, population health outcomes, but it might be a short-term benchmark that we're at.
So I want to have every other member of the panel, because this is a really critical issue, but then come last to you, but then you can head out.
Thank you. I was going to add something from the process perspective. I think that was very, very easy, the criteria. And I think as we talked about convergence moving forward, it's a really great question from a process perspective. Because these are the policies, we're all set up, okay, the network, we did this through the network, and we said, well, what happens over time? I mean, how do we communicate community innovation and really amplify the efforts locally and remotely up through convergence up to our state advocates who are also at the table setting their priorities and working in the legislation. But then how do we also, when they're setting their priorities around the policy agenda, how do we say this is the opportunity, this is the right opportunity, let's go now for the back of the network to local communities. It may not be one of the policy agendas per se, but it's got to be a communication process that we can constantly be moving forward in the right direction, but at the same time be flexible enough to go with where the political will is, and there's an opportunity to grab it and use the network. So I think there's also a lot of attention right now, the local, just recent discussions around how do we keep that process flowing, how do we ensure that our communication is honest and quick and responsive.
Tracy, next.
I think I'll probably take the question a little bit differently from a local government perspective. And although we in our grant currently are working on a minimum of 15 different kind of initiatives, I think for us what we were looking for, in addition to some of the very strong, everything we're doing is evidence-based. Some are a little stronger than others. But we were also, I think, trying to look for that sense of innovation and maybe some windows of opportunity that we felt were unique to our area, and to, with these funds, be able to delve into that in a way that we wouldn't have been able to before. And for me, there's two particular areas that I think fall in that category. One around our built environment work, and with that were linked directly with our NPO in terms of contracting. So this has been a relationship that's changed from me inviting them to come and be in some of our talks and explain who they are, to them inviting me to go and talk to their boards, to finally doing some comments on things together, to joint general LP plan workshops, bringing teams together. So it's really evolved over time. Whereas just prior to this grant, we were actually invited to the interior work group that they have as they're updating their TP. That was a huge eye-opener for me because I saw what their internal process looks like. I think I was in the belly of the beast. And within that,
can I ask, can you just explain some of the acronyms that you
have? Oh, I'm sorry. MPO is the Metropolitan Planning Organization, and so that's the Regional Transportation and Planning Organization. It's very different. Sorry.
It's different. Stop me.
TP. It's TP.
Oh, in general plans. Sorry. It's healthy general plans. And so, sorry, I got a little off.
Sorry, Tracy.
So I think what's unique in our area in San Diego is a few opportunities. One is our MPO, which also has another acronym, which is SANDAG, the San Diego Association of Governments. And it's 18 cities and our incorporated area, which is very unique because a lot of, in the Bay Area, a lot of the MPOs go over multiple counties, and that makes a very difficult kind of communication piece. In San Diego, we have the same overlap in terms of jurisdiction. So our public health and our MPO are aligned, which is unique and provides a real opportunity for us to kind of streamline some of that dialogue. We also have a real opportunity in that San Diego is the first MPO community that has to deal with, here's another one, SB 375, which is the legislation in California requiring greenhouse gas reductions. So all of a sudden, people that really thought health was a good idea, all of a sudden they are at the table with very different reasons. They see how do they incorporate active transportation now to help cut their greenhouse gas, and public health all of a sudden becomes a much stronger ally, not just a nice person to have there to talk about good things, but really as a mechanism that all of a sudden becomes helpful to them. So I think these were unique opportunities, and within that, within the grant, we actually are working on changing their regional transportation plan, which is their forecast for the next 50 years, and incorporating health within that. And we're also requiring the metrics be developed so that they're actually measuring this and becoming engaged in public health. Just last month, one of the other deliverables that we have was the creation within the MPO organization of a public health stakeholders working group. To my knowledge, it's the first of its kind that actually is within the MPO talking about all of these public health issues. We feel like we really created a systems change into another discipline that's bringing health there. So we're very excited about this. We see this as real things we want to be able to share with other communities. We're not saying we're getting it all right. It's very dynamic and exciting. But these, I think, are, as we're moving forward in terms of greenhouse gases, in terms of active transportation, in terms of really leveraging partnerships with the Department of Transportation, with HUD, we really need to start looking at this kind of nexus so that we're synergizing the work that we are doing together. One other quick thing, and I'll,
or should I turn over to you?
No, okay. One more thing, yeah.
One other thing, in that MPO, another project that we're working on is actually working on health impact and forecasting tools. When I went into that one meeting, that the internal meeting, I realized I was so out of my league because I did not understand how, everything was their model, and it was like being a steamroller. All of the decisions were based on this modeling and forecasting, and health wasn't even a part of the decision making. So this, for me, is a really important way that we need to start looking at this in so many other fields, is, again, when looking at health and health policies, how do we bring those kinds of metrics? So decision-making does include health. It doesn't mean health is going to win every time, but at least decision-makers need to understand what the trade-offs are to health. And in this project, we're taking that first step to be able to start having that dialogue and to bring that information as a part of decision-making.
That's wonderful. And I'll give you prerogative to wax lyrical before you leave.
Thank you. So when I started this work in Kern County about 4 years ago, talking about obesity, but from environmental and policy change, I got a lot of resistance and pushback from my own upper management. our public health department, like many public health departments, are institutions who are so entrenched in doing business a certain way, direct programs, that I was told by one of the upper management, obesity is a personal issue, it's not environmental policy change, people can control what they eat. And this was such a hard thing for me to change the mindset in public health, to bring aboard upper management to see, no, really is looking at it from a different perspective. So my recommendation to public health departments who are trying to do this work, work now to get upper management on your side to really see this environmental policy change. Again, when I used to talk to planners in Kern County, they often felt public health, you do best what you do, immunizations, tobacco prevention, car seats, let us do the planning. You have no idea what goes into planning. But, no, it sounds bad, but it was very much when I came to learn more about the history of land use and planning from public health, how there were at one time two agencies that merged out. It took us a while to build that relationship. Communities also, what? You just don't want to set up a table and do a health fair? You're actually asking us what's the resources we need? We're not used to this. It has taken such a long time, but I'm really proud of us in Kern County that within 3 years, we've made huge shifts in mindsets. Huge, huge relationship building, like you're saying. It takes a long time, so start now in that relationship building, getting the mindset. If you win over your public health officer and the director, everybody else seems to want to join on board. And what it did for us in the 4 years that I've been doing this work, or 3 years when the ERA was put out, it put us in a good place to say we are ready to do this because we understand more. Whether it was having all of our management watch the unnatural causes series so we can talk, that was one of the first ways we started the dialogue. When I would talk to them about environmental obesity changes, or excuse me, policy changes, nobody understood. But the minute we started an on-site farmers markets that impacted community and health and staff, the minute we started watching the unnatural causes series and we made all staff and now management staff watch it, we started to get this dialogue going. The minute we started doing a planners roundtable series, was saying, listen, planners, what are the resources you need we can bring? All of a sudden, we started to make these small shifts that set kind of like a domino effect. You know, each piece next to the next where we could lay our foundation. We are dealing with AB 32, the greenhouse gas emissions. Now public health is partnering and saying in your health elements for housing, for transportation, circulation, what are the things we can look at? Now communities are saying, we want to help you collect that data that's needed for your general plans. So this has really set us up in a good position, but it didn't come overnight. So start the relationship now. That's all I have to say.
Thank you.
I feel like a Hertz commercial as I run out the door, so I'm sorry. If there's any questions, Matthew has my contact information. He'd be happy to pass it on.
Yeah, no, and we'll pass that on. Thank you, Avtaran. Safe travels.
Thank you. This is a great panel. They're going to take it on from here.
So, Marion, did you turn the mic off, Marion?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll leave it on because we're going to continue talking. But so we have 15 minutes left. Move down so we can. You're not down the screen because you're hiding behind the screen. We have 15 minutes left. I want to just continue to get questions from the audience. We have one. Yes, if you could again say again your name and organization again. So can I tailor that question slightly, because we're talking, you know, in terms of how we focus on the policy agenda that's coming through convergence, clearly that's a dynamic that we need to address, the whole question. And so in addressing that, could you also speak to how the communities built that into their policy agenda? And I'd like maybe Peter to talk about from the state level and then Tracy from the county.
Honestly, go from a messaging perspective, because I do have disclosure. I'm not a public health I don't have my master's in public health, I don't have my MD, I don't have my PhD. I'm a bureaucrat, and I'm proud of it. because I'm a bureaucrat that tries to get things done. I have become kind of like grafting into an olive tree. I have become grafted into the public health family. Because I work on public health issues of the state from a process perspective. And I really very strongly believe in these initiatives, and I very strongly believe in these policies. And while I won't be able to speak to the outcome measure and how that's going to be effective in the community, I can talk to you about how we're trying to get things done at the state level. And what we're doing specifically with the governor's obesity summit this year, a lot of it had to do with education. And if you go to a school and you talk to a school about obesity, almost everyone shuts off. If you go to the State Department of Education in California and you talk about obesity, they say they don't care, mandate too much money, can't do it. When you talk about API, you talk about academic performance, that's part of their mandate that they already have to do. And we can show the link, which we can, and science started to show this, that APIs, you know, we have wonderful examples from communities in California funded by the endowment, funded by Kaiser, where they shifted their focus, they just made small changes, it was leadership and how they ran their PE programs, how they focused on physical activity, and not only were students healthier, but students did better in school. They performed better in tests. Their academic performance went up. And that's when we started to get some, really make some difference with our education partners. And we have to do that across the board. We have to do that when we're talking to our transportation colleagues. If we talk about obesity, they probably don't care. You know, and I heard it perfectly from someone in the Attorney General's office in California who's on our Health and All Policies Task Force. There are a lot of people out there who don't care about the moral imperative of health, but they care about the work that they have to do. So when we start to not frame it from an obesity or health perspective, when we talk about health as the co-benefit to something that will benefit what they care about, then we start making a difference. And that's what we're trying to do in California, that's what we're trying to do at the state level, and that's what I try to do from the adopted public health bureaucrat perspective. And what we all need to do in the public health community and out to be able to really make a difference in what we do. So, not from the outcome perspective or the actual measures perspective, but from the messaging perspective, we have a real opportunity.
Tracy next, if I can, and I'll come back to the funders. But also, and San Diego will acknowledge, is a, compared to, say, the Bay Area, certainly is a more conservative area of the state, and so that may also play into the messaging question for you.
I'd like to get into the evaluation piece of that, because we are looking at activity. I think that you raise a point is obesity prevention or decreasing obesity is a longer goal, especially if your focus is on policy systems, environmental change, you know, because it kind of lags. And so what we are using in terms of evaluation, particularly in the schools, I'll give you one measure, is we're looking at increasing the actual activity of kids in PE classes. That's part of our intervention. So what we're doing is we're actually measuring MVPA, so moderate to vigorous physical activity. So we are focused on to increasing the measurement of physical fitness and physical activity itself in terms of our measures, and we think that that is a realistic measure of what our intervention is and reflects, I think, what you were referring to.
I think my concern is that we'll look unsuccessful, and then we will lose the funds.
No, and those are the outcome measures that we are being held accountable for. So that will not look unsuccessful, because that is what, we will be unsuccessful if we didn't get those kids, 50% of the kids, which is what we're on the line for, of being having 50% moderate to vigorous activity during their PE. But that's how we just said, I mean, that's the criteria that we are setting within our own interventions, and it is more fitness related for that particular intervention.
Marion or Jody, quickly, and then.
Yeah, there are a lot of comments on this one. This is a very hot topic, and we probably could have had a whole session on.
Yeah, I wanted to.
Meet outside afterwards, we'll keep going.
Just a couple of quick points. One, Peter mentioned that we co-hosted an obesity summit with the governor a number of years ago, and we spent many weeks on this topic, of whether or not we're going to call the summit an obesity summit or not, for all the reasons that you and others in the room probably are thinking. And we ended up calling it the obesity summit because we did believe that there was a crisis, a health crisis, a health epidemic at hand, and we needed to call it out. And I still believe that's true, on the one hand. On the other hand, we understand that to achieve any change at the population level in obesity will take many, 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 many years, and a lot of policy change, from food marketing to children to, you know, eliminating food deserts in communities. We don't have, you know, the silver bullet of tobacco that we can focus on. And tobacco was able to say tobacco. They didn't say lung cancer, really, as what they were after. Having said that, though, I think we need to be very clear, very transparent about what we can achieve within the frame of reference of our work. And we certainly look at, in California, the FitnessGram measurement tool, which is a very imperfect tool for lots of reasons, as a way to measure fitness, which we think is a very valuable and maybe the more valuable measure, because we're certainly not after kids, you know, dieting. We're after, you know, healthy food. We're after healthy weight. We're after health. So I think it's going to be a tension going forward. I don't think we're going to go one way or the other, but I do advocate for a lot of transparency in terms of what can be accomplished across a period of time, you know, and being really realistic about it.
So we're almost out of time. We have 5 minutes, and I wanted to, continuing on this discussion, have the panel make some final thoughts, and certainly you can address some of the comments you've heard, but just so we can do one last round on the panel, so all of you to say final closing thoughts, unless Marion, that was a good closing thought for you. That was great. We could end at that point. But why don't we start with Jody next, and then I'd like to then go to Peter, and then I think it really is appropriate that we end with Tracy representing the community voice. So Jody?
Yeah, I guess I was going to comment on that too, building up what Marion said. I think that you're spot on. I mean, this kind of obesity is multifactorial and it's going to take a long time. It's not like our physician daily. We need to change that. Why don't we go on our goals? We're going to reach it. We'll improve our goals. We have some shorter term goals and options we're going to be tracking over time. But we can't lose sight of the long term change. And I think that's the key to where policy and environmental change is the root of the work, because those are long-term, you know, infrastructure changes. They're built environments, parks, and safety of parks, and policies on the books. I mean, those aren't going to go away, regrettably, over time. And so we do need time for obesity. We need a lot of time. So that's why that's most important, as opposed to the kind of exercise programs that come and go with funding in the short term. So I think that's the key to why policy and built environment is so important, in addition to maybe educating people and getting people out there moving now. And I think I was going to say earlier that this is kind of the gateway drug of obesity. You know, we look at it and say, no, people get it, they see it, they can understand it, we can work on built environment policy change, but what we're really talking about are healthy communities. And it's allowed us to start talking about violence and violence prevention and safety and food deserts and equity. You know, spot on, but we could have just had any of those conversations directly. But it's just, you know, the long, you know, keep an eye on the prize long term, you know, in terms of obesity, but really where we're going for communities. And then I think you're right, stay attuned to what needs to be shown now. We got to deliver now on grants. We can't lose sight of that, too. So it's the long term vision and then the short term delivery. I think that's the challenge now.
Yeah, I think that one lesson, going back on my last comment, and actually to build on it, and she said, the summit was called the Governor's Summit on Health, Nutrition, and Obesity, which is clearly an issue of health and nutrition. So hopefully we're getting closer there. But all the different things that are really important for us to do, we really want to advance our goals. As I said before, we have to work on the messaging, we have to work on the partnership building and how we do that. We do have to set priorities. In the public health world, especially, we talk about multi-sector built environment issues and environmental factors. We can talk about everything. In trying to create the Governor's Health and All Policies Task Force, we were looking at who should be at the table from across the state. Right now, we have 19 state agencies. We could have probably listed me. And if every public health had their way, we would probably have me. But we have to start to make priorities, and we have to look at different areas. After I was talking about Kern County, their reality was a little bit different than it might be in another county. So we have to look at what are our what's our long-term goal? We have to have that common vision. We can't let go of that, because that's what drives a lot of us. But we also have to realize, how can we achieve that goal? Make set steps for ourselves, set priorities, build the partnerships, communicate well with others, and find those champions. And that's really important. So we're trying to do in California, what I hope we can try to do in communities across the country.
I think what we recognize is where you live is the biggest predictor of your health. And I think that that's the fundamental part that's been framing so much of what's coming out of Kaiser, the California Endowment, the natural causes, and certainly has been the frame that we've used in San Diego County. I think that's been for us our real rallying call. We've based a lot of our internal programming on 3450. You may be familiar with that. It's catchy, it's easy to remember. Is that three behaviors, which are nutrition, physical activity, and tobacco use, lead to four of the top chronic diseases, which are cardiovascular, diabetes, some cancers, and respiratory problems, and it accounts for more than 50% of all deaths. So before all of this funding started, I had a very small unit running all of the chronic disease and health disparities work in our county of over 3 million. And this was the frame that we decided to focus on. So we realized that by focusing on those behaviors, and those behaviors are linked so much to your built environment, that was really the strategy that we've been building our work on through both the County Obesity Initiative, and it's something that our Board of Supervisors just passed in July. We're still active going on, and as a health strategy agenda looking out into the next 10 years, and it adopts this whole 3-4-50 principle. So I think that the more that we are together sharing that information and kind of unifying on these issues, the stronger impact we're going to have in terms of the funding, in terms of the opportunities that come our way. So just as a local community that was funded, we see it as an amazing opportunity, and we're very grateful to have that opportunity. It comes with a lot of work and a lot of challenges, and we're doing everything we can so that we really do have the success and the return on investment that we know everybody wants to see for the future. And I just wanted to also send a word of thanks to the state and to the funders for creating the California Convergence, and particularly with the assistance in terms of the applications, because for us as a local community, it provided a feeling of a team spirit and a real collaboration as we were moving forward. And it could have been a scary and nasty, competitive situation, but it really was something that I think brought us together and continues our dialogue together.
That really is, I think, a perfect final comment. And so thank you for that. I want to just say, to bring it back to the theme of this conference, which I certainly think has been one of the best APHA conferences. I think as many of us are heading home today, we look at the last few days, and I think today's panel, even though it was early in the morning and we weren't obviously able to get the people standing in the corners like we've seen elsewhere, I think is an example of what really the issues that got pulled together during APHA here over the last 3 days. And I think focusing on the social justice and the equity points that Jody and Avtar and Marion discussed, I think everyone's actually touched on that today. When you look at the panel we had today, and these are just, of course, representatives of so many of the voices from California, we're not unique. I think that it is testament to the leadership that's been provided, not just but from the foundations, although that's been critical, but also from voices at the state and the communities. It really has been incredible, but there are other communities doing it as well, and I do want to acknowledge that there is a national convergence process, and the endowment, Kaiser, Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, who are represented here today, as well as other funders, are engaged nationally and engaged with the administration in Washington. The other point I think that's critical is we did have such a critical state leadership from our administration, and there are governor's offices now, and we're seeing a change in governor's mansions, which I think will really change potentially the shape of the nation in ways that is pause and cause for concern for many of us, because there are leaders at the state level who actually are wanting to refuse to take the federal dollars that are being made available. And so that, I think, makes it even more critical, I think, as Marion said, that we have the voices converging together, lifting up these priorities, converging around the policy change that is heard not just in the counties, and the cities and the neighborhoods, but at the state level, and then we all come together to be heard loudly in Washington, because I think that's where we really will see, as you said, Marion, that movement for change at a national level, because this really is a critical moment. So I wanted to thank you all, and thank again, ask you to join me in thanking our wonderful panel today, because they really were wonderful. And contact information is on here for all of the panel members. And